Welcome to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I am your host, Monica Hadley. And our guest today is a return guest, which we love having those. And you know, seeing as I've been doing this show since 2006, so this will be my, you know, it's my 20th. We're coming up on a 20-year anniversary. So I've had a few repeat guests over the years, although not a lot. Our guest today is Yasmin Ongo, and she is the Anthony Award-nominated author of the critically acclaimed Nina Knight series, including Her Name is Knight, They Come at Night, and It Ends with Knight. And we did discuss one of those. I don't remember which one, but a few years back. That series had been featured in the New York Times, Oprah Daily, The Guardian, Pop Sugar, and the Women's World Book Club, and is currently in development for TV. So that's exciting. She's also the recipient of the 2020 Eleanor Taylor Bland Award for Emerging Writers of Color and has been nominated for a whole slew of other awards. Now, hailing from Northern Virginia, Yasmin Ongo is a first-generation Ghanaian American, an educator teaching middle and high school English, and is now writing full-time and freelancing as a development editor. Welcome back to Writers' Voices, Yasmin. So
thank you for having me again, Monica.
So you're living the dream, huh?
That's what they call it. Sometimes it feels like a nightmare a lot of times, though.
Wow. So the book that we're talking about today, which is Behind These Four Walls, what number is this in terms of your published books now?
I think this is, we're going on my fifth book published.
Okay.
Yeah, the Three Nights and then Not What She Seems. And then, so this is my fifth.
Okay. And so you've got a different lead character now. Mm-hmm. So tell me why you decided to leave Nina Knight behind.
Right. Well, I decided, my publisher decided that, you know, they just wanted a trilogy. And then, so once we were done with the trilogy, then they wanted me to move on and try another series, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't in a series mindset. So I wanted to do a couple of standalones and see what that feels like to just do like a one and done kind of book. So I did that with Not What She Seems, which came out last year. And then again with Behind These Four Walls, which just came out yesterday, actually. So.
Oh, wow. January 1st, 2026.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and the character, tell us about your character in Behind These Four Walls.
Right. Isla Thorne she's a pretty strong character. She's one of those characters that just like pulls it up by the bootstrap, and she's got like grit, and she hasn't had like the easiest childhood growing up, and so that has shaped who she has become as an adult, and how she's resourceful, and how she's like really I don't want to call it like a street savvy, but like that's what it is, more like world savvy. She knows how to read people and kind of figure out what it is that she needs to achieve whatever goals that she wants. And then she, you know, will kind of bone up on how to get that thing, how to know how to do that thing, and then kind of go at it like full force. And so I really enjoyed writing her because she's just really like, this is what I want to do. And I'm going to go do it, whether it works or not. I'm just going to just go for it. She's kind of fearless. And so that was kind of cool.
And Behind These Four Walls is suspense. Is that kind of the genre that you would call it?
Yes.
Also, yes, detective, psychological suspense, kind of. But she is a detective, sort of. She's an investigator.
Sort of. Well, you know, her trade is to get like secrets. She's a secret snatcher. She, you know, she She compiles all the bones of people. So she goes, she works for a PR firm, and she goes and gets like the juicy stories that like celebrities and stuff don't want anyone to know. And then however the PR firm uses it. So she really knows, she likes, you know, well, not necessarily that she likes, but that's what she does. So yeah, an investigator, and she just she definitely knows how to get information that she needs. And then becomes more I guess refined as a mystery kind of investigator when she goes to look for her disappeared friend, her missing friend.
So tell me how you developed this character. Where did you start from, and how did you round it out?
Yeah, that's a good question. Where did Isla start from? She started from I really wanted someone who I wanted a character who, you know, was fearless, different than the other characters, different than Nina, different than Jack. I wanted her to really have from the very beginning a sense of what she wanted to do and not be afraid of burning everything in her wake as she does it. And I just wanted to write that kind of character, and I wanted to write about someone who really goes on this mission of I need to find out what happened to my friend, because a lot of times, you know, people are missing, and especially, you know, people who come from certain demographics or people who come from different social statuses, and you never know, right? And so she's never heard, you know, whatever happened to her friend, so she decides, I know this, you know, powerful family has something to do with, you know, my friend missing, and so I'm going to expose them. So she uses those traits that she's learned as, you know, the bone, you know, grabber, you know, getting all those secrets to go and find those secrets about this family by infiltrating them, by, you know, going in there and being among them. So that she can expose them for who she thinks they really are and what they did to her friend.
Okay, now it's interesting, since this is audio only, someone
Yeah.
listening to this may not know that you are African American, right?
Yeah.
And Isla is also African American, and the family she's infiltrating, the rich, powerful family, is also African American.
Yes.
Now, I'm assuming that was a very deliberate choice, and I'm curious about why you decided to do that.
Yeah, well, in all of my books, the majority of the characters are Black, because I just that's just where I am comfortable in. There's an array of you know cultures in my stories. Most of the time, I'm highlighting a character, or I have a character in there that comes from my Ghanaian culture for sure. It's just because I like, you know, all these different types of stories, and sometimes I don't necessarily see, you know, myself in those stories. Not that I necessarily have to, but sometimes it's just fun. And I wanted to just write about, you know, Black people in this space where, you know, you might not have imagined, oh, this like really, really rich family, like they're just really crazy rich, like Buffett rich, Warren Buffett rich, right? And like this is what they're doing, or you know, and this, you know, so I just wanted that kind of, you know, story, and to just take like, you know, just have a Black take on it. Not that it's really any different than, you know, any other story with any other race as the highlight, but yeah, so that's just what I write.
Right, yeah. Now, where is Ghana? And tell us a little bit about that and how your Ghanaian background influences you as a writer.
Sure. So Ghana is in West Coast Africa, and it's just, you know, it's right on the coast, so it's called the Gold Coast. And my parents immigrated from there back in the day. They came here to America to attend college, university, and then that's where they met, and they you know had me and everything. So I have grown up, you know, I say, living in two worlds, right? My Ghanaian culture, when I go home, it's very Ghanaian. My mom is always was always, cooking Ghanaian food. And then when I go to school, it's very American, and so I and all my friends were, American. All my family that I know on the weekend is Ghanaian, right? And so it was two different worlds, but it was very interesting. And it was a lot during growing up of trying to decide which culture I really want to be in. And of course, when you're when you are a kid or when you're living in a certain environment, you don't appreciate it as much. And so you want to do like the other thing. So you want to be more American. You want to, have more like McDonald's instead of rice and stew and stuff like that, And so that's what it was. But as I grew up and had my own kids, and then, my father passed and I realized, it's very fleeting, right? The time that you have with family. And so I really want my kids to really know their culture and be proud of their culture. I'm proud of my culture, and have always been, but didn't know quite how to show my pride. And so in my books is where I show my pride in my culture. Even if it's just this little snippet, there's always something in there, mostly food, because I just really love food. But like there's always something that will be Ghanaian in my books.
Oh, interesting. So in behind these four walls, what's Ghanaian in this book?
In Behind These Four Walls, Isla's father, who doesn't make it on the page, he passed away before the book starts for her, but he is from Ghana.
Okay. So, as I was reading it, and there was a lot of, she thinks about her father a lot, and he's sort of part of her motivation is the fact that that she wasn't able to prove what happened to him. And
Yes.
so that made me wonder, is there another book out there for Isla Thorne?
I wish there would be. If they asked me, I would do it because I think, her relationship that she had with her father, it's definitely inspired by like my relationship with my dad, right? And how he was, back then when I was a kid, bigger than life, and the decisions that, he made and things like that. And it was just great times. And so that whole how he turned up missing, and what happened to him, that really moves her, right? And then she sees that with Eden, and that really, you're right, I'm so glad you brought that up, prompts her, because it's a triggering thing for her. Definitely is something that was a little bit slice of life, like my, it didn't really happen to me, but something was similar, right? Happened, and so I just kind of spun it into what it was for Isla in the book. But yeah, I would love to like write more about that. Yeah, that would be cool.
Now the book starts out in LA, right?
Yes.
Yes. And
That's where she's made it to. Yep.
and then she goes back to, is it Virginia or is it
Bridget, Charlottesville.
Charlotte? Okay. So those, I'm assuming you said you grew up in Virginia. Have you also lived in LA?
I haven't, but I love LA. I don't know why. I did the few, I've been there a few times, and every time I go, it's like, just a whole nother world, like Las Vegas, but really LA, because you're like, oh my gosh, all the celebrities are here. And I know that they're everywhere, but you just think LA celebrities and just the, I just call it the land of the beautiful people, because it's always nice looking there, and everybody, even when they're looking grungy, they're still looking great. And I'm like, that's not necessarily how everybody looks in Virginia. And definitely not in South Carolina on like a Tuesday, right? Like we'll just, you see, I'm wearing sweats right now, and they would have like, I don't know, their name brand sweats that look great.
Yeah,
So I just
with
always,
sparkles on them.
with sparkles and like a full face of makeup and stuff, which that's wonderful and everything. And so when I go there, like everybody, even if I go to the convenience store, it's like a, it's like, oh my gosh, to me. And so LA has always been like that kind of like otherworldly place. And so yeah, that's why I just had to have Isla like be there. And that was the place where she and Eden were gonna go so that Eden can, can be a starlet, because she just really, just the things that people say, I'm gonna move to LA and become a movie star. And so that's what, Eden said that she was gonna do, her best friend that turns up missing.
Right,
And
right.
Isla just wants to go and, work on, her garden and stuff like that. And so that's where it starts. And then Charlottesville, I chose that because I do like the smaller towns where things happen, are easy, are like really mysterious to me. And then also my sister, she lives in Charlottesville, and it just really left an impression on me when I went there. And where she lives on a mountain, and so that's why that their house is on a
Ah.
mountain, because I went on that mountain and drove on it, and the mountain on that Monticello is on, so Carter Mountain, and it terrified me. And so like that stayed with me, like my terror of driving up that winding mountain. And I was like, yeah, I have to write about that. And so that's what you, if when you read the book, when Isla is having that thought about, oh my gosh, you could like go down this mountain, like you could fall. And just like those were my thoughts as I was driving up that mountain to my sister.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up that was the mountain Monticello was on, because there's sort of, that was Thomas Jefferson's home, and of course it was built by black enslaved people, and he fathered people, he fathered his children with his with a black
One of them,
enslaved
yes.
women. Enslaved women, and now you have this black family living there.
Yes. Living on that mountain, living right on top. Yes.
So I'm guessing that was somewhat deliberate too. It was sort of.
Been up in there too, thought about it, and I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna have, and they're living right at the top and have all this space, and it's just, and everyone is like beneath them, like beneath them at the bottom of the mountain, including Monticello. But no, but yeah, that was funny.
Now, you write a lot of description about this compound that they live in. Have you, I personally don't know that I've ever been in a really wealthy person's compound environment, house like that, to know how to describe it. How did you do your research on that?
Right, because I haven't either, and I'm still waiting. That's why I keep going to LA, so that someone will maybe invite me in. But honestly, it's like, internet research, and then also whenever, like, we've traveled and we've gone, like some of our friends have just taken us around. Like I have some friends in Pennsylvania who took us around, where they are near Pittsburgh, and there were these beautiful homes, like nest just like where the Corrigans, which is the family in the book, with like similar to where they live, which is, it's very mountainous or hilly, right? And they and it's near Villanova, if that can give you a like a, so it's very affluent there, and the homes are gorgeous and lush, and they're just nestled among all of these like trees, and with lakes and things. And so like as we're just driving through, like being nosy, looking at everyone's homes, like I always take pictures of all these homes, and then I just take like different things that I like from all of the homes. And like when my friend would tell me which famous people live there, then I would like look up their home on like Zillow or something like that, so I could see what's actually on their property, right? And then just use a little bit of like that. So
Right,
that's what I
right.
use for inspiration and research.
Yeah. I definitely have visited some older mansions, that are open to the public now, particularly in Europe. I was just at Lake Como last September and went, yeah, it was so gorgeous, and went to visit. We went through this one, I can't even remember the name of it now, but it's well known for its extensive gardens. And you get to tour the home too. The home is impressive, but the gardens are really amazing because they're
Gardens.
all
Well, I would
along the
love to see
lake.
that. Oh,
Yeah, I was actually pleasantly surprised about how much I liked the Lake Como region. Now, we're a little bit in the off season, and it was still really pretty crowded. So I don't know if I would enjoy it as much if I went, because it has recently become so much more popular, partly because of George Clooney, I think. Yeah, he's got a home there now on the lake. But yeah, the tourism has really increased there over the last few years. So it would have been even more fun to go before it was so well known, but oh well.
Well, I'm going to write that down too, I didn't know that there were so many pretty things over there, especially the gardens. I love a good garden, and like one of like garden mazes are like my obsession, and I would love to like go into one and just, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because the person I was traveling with when I had said I wanted to do this garden, she was like, you know, she wasn't that into gardens, but she loved it. She loved it after we were there. And to me, that's one of the first things that I look for is gardens when I'm traveling somewhere. Because I do still love churches and cathedrals and art museums and all of those things too. And the food. Yeah. So Yasmin, how long did you spend writing Behind These Four Walls?
Probably about 6 to 9 months. I would say a year total of thinking about it, because, you know, I have to give my idea to my editor pretty early on. But it takes me a long time to really like sit and marinate on a story. I really can't sit and write it until the whole story is pretty much plotted out in my head. I don't write extensive outlines. I might jot down notes. So if you looked at my desk right now, there's like literally like post-it notes of different things all over the place, so that I don't forget. And then I just think. I'm thinking about the main character. I'm thinking about the place, especially because setting for me is very important, especially what I want to do there, and the tone that I want to set, and all of that, right? And I'm thinking about like, what is the end? Like, what is it, the big find at the end? What am I trying to get to? And then when I have like really, and who is my villain, right? Because I really love a good villain. And how do I make this villain someone that the reader will like really like think about and really hate or kind of like or be entertained by? And so when I figure out the most of the story, then I can actually sit down and start to write it, which probably sounds like a hot mess. But once I've got the story in my head, honestly, I can type it up. I can write it really quickly because it just kind of comes out, and I'm just typing it up. So I'm thinking about it for about a year to, I don't know, 6 months, and then probably, you know, 6 to 3 months out from when it's due, then I'm actually sitting down and typing.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yes, I know. That's why I don't recommend that for people, because it's very, very, I write better under pressure, and probably my editor wouldn't like that. So don't let her hear that part, because then I tend to send them like a hot mess, like, this is everything I got. I'm sorry. But I honestly cannot start until I really have a good feel of, I like where this story is right now. But then when I get down and just start typing, I can really mash out a lot of words pretty quickly.
Okay. So then do you like write start to finish? In other words, do you write everything in the order that it ends up in the book? And which is primarily chronological, right? With some with flashbacks,
I don't do that either. So I really, you know, make it difficult for myself. I can't write in order and I can't write until I know the story. So I write by scene. I write everything out of order. And listen, I have been known to send my developmental editor a story that is not in order because I forgot the order in which I wanted the scenes to go. And I didn't go back and check. So I just sent her the whole thing. And she was like, This sounds like it should have belonged like a few chapters. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot. Because I typically I write them out of order. I try to write them in order, like so I'll write in Scrivener. That's why I can't like when I'm drafting initially, it won't be in Word because I need to be able to move throughout my scenes and chapters easily. And Scrivener is the best for me to do that. And so when I'm doing that and I don't write with like titles, I'm really bad about titles. So my chapters aren't titled. So it gets a little confusing where the chapters have gone if I've like added a new scene or something like that. So I need to get myself in order and make sure that I have everything at least in chronological order for her when before I send next time. But yeah, I don't write in order. Because I just write whatever I'm feeling like at the moment. And something can really hit me that morning, like, oh yeah, like this end scene is really, really great. So go ahead and write that. And I'll just write that. Yeah. And then I'll go back and, whatever I have to, do. But typically that's how I do it. Yeah. It's crazy, huh?
That
Oh.
is crazy. No, it's
It's
not crazy.
a
It's a
hot
it's an
mess.
interesting process. And it
It is.
works for you.
Works for me. Yeah, and it stresses me out, and I don't. I've tried to write chronologically, but when I try to do that, then I feel like the creativity for me isn't quite there. I feel like it's a forced thing. So I just really write what I feel comfortable in, what I feel like, oh yeah, this is going to be some really, really good stuff because I don't like to waste words. So I won't write a whole bunch and then like cut out 50,000 words, and start over again. So that's why it takes me a long time to write because when I'm writing, these are all things that I'm going to use as part of the story until the editor, cuts to trim down and tighten.
So, do you don't go back and do much editing yourself on things like before you send it to the editor, have you written everything and then gone back and worked through everything, or do you, as you write it, is pretty much how it ends up being sent?
It depends on how bad I've been about procrastinating. I typically try to finish it and then go through it, and like really make sure that the points that I want. I'm not so much worried about like the conventional errors, grammatical and all of that stuff, but definitely that the message and point that I want is in there. And I go back looking for like maybe plot holes and stuff. And I'm an overwriter, so you would think that me, when I wait until the last minute to like hash out the book, that maybe I would end up writing like below words, but I end up writing way more words than I'm supposed to. And I it's because I got kids and I want there's TV I need to watch. I don't want to go back and make up some new stuff to write in there. I just want to cut things, right? So I'm going to give you all I have, more than I have. So that we don't have to, you don't have to tell me, oh, we need to add this thing. All we need to do is cut stuff. And so that for me is easier.
And do you find it easier to have the editor do the cutting?
Yes, and I don't argue with her either. I'm just like, whatever it is that you want to cut, because honestly, me, I'll be like, I think I need everything because I like a full story. Even for me as a reader, I like to know all the things. And so I write all the things in the story. And so there, she's the one that says, oh, you know what, maybe we can like trim this part. And I'm like, okay, whatever, whatever you want to do. So I'll rarely say, no, this absolutely needs to stay in because I know that I've written more than was needed just to make sure that we have everything that we need for the book period.
Wow. Now, I was just reviewing kind of the emails that I had gotten about this book, and Maria Shriver's Sunday Paper selected this thriller as one of the five novels they can't wait to read in 2026. That's
You
kind of
know, isn't that
cool.
something? That was a
Yeah.
great surprise. That was an honor.
Along with Anna Quinlan, George Saunders, and a couple others. So that's really cool. So,
Really? Oh, yay.
yeah,
I didn't.
yeah.
Thank you. I didn't know about Anna Quinlan and George Saunders, but thank you for telling
Yeah,
me.
yeah. So, was this book fun to write?
It was fun. It really was fun because I definitely imagine how would somebody who's like trying to infiltrate this family, like how would that even happen in this day and age? And it's just it was fun to me because, you know, I wanted to make the family as totally, you know, stereotypical in it, like in what we think a rich family might be, in some of how their behaviors may be, and then also like very dark, and you can just really go very, you know, very many places. I wanted Isla to be very ballsy because I figured if you infiltrate a family that's used to people trying to do that, you have to have like something different that's really going to capture them, and that's her being ballsy. So even if they may or may not believe, you know, why she's really there, they're just so like invested in like, let's just find out what this hot mess is and just see like what she does because she's just so interesting. She's different from what they've seen, you know?
Well, also she actually, even though she was, kind of set up the youngest daughter to as her way in, she actually also sincerely cared about her.
She did.
So there
She did.
was, it's like, it's interesting to me how you conveyed her kind of her own self-doubt about whether or not this family deserved to be taken down. And her inclination to actually respect some members of the family for what they have accomplished and who they are and wanting to actually connect with them. It was like she kind of goes, she vacillates a lot between thinking they're the enemy and thinking, no, maybe they're not. There's something else going on here.
I love that you said that because that definitely was very much her vibe, right? Like she goes in, you go in thinking something. These people had something to do with her disappearance, right? And that means they must be monsters. They must be some sort of way because we all have, you know, our thoughts about how we perceive like wealthy people and like that whole how people are, right? Or even celebrities or whatever. But then when you get into their lives, you realize that, wow, they are, some of them might be hardworking and some of them might be like really, really sweet, you know, like Holland was. And maybe they're not quite deserving of what I intend. So how do I now correct or not correct, but redirect like some of the things that I was going to do? How do I figure out who is the problem and who might not be the problem? And so that becomes her new kind of mission.
Yasmin, why don't you read a little bit from Behind These Four Walls for us?
Okay, I will do that. I'm going to read from the prologue. He rolled down the window of his old Explorer, letting in the cool night air to help clear his muddled thoughts. Maya was at home, asleep with the baby, though his daughter would be up soon after for another feeding. Maya would wonder where he'd gone. She wouldn't know just yet that he had been driven out of their home by Shane. He couldn't stand to look at her. No matter what, he was about to disappoint his wife. And he tried to figure out which disappointment would be the worst kind of hurt, that he had somehow allowed himself to be seduced by millions and sucked into their deal, agreeing to put his name on the offshore accounts, anticipating a cut that would set him and his family up for life, or that he'd betrayed his wife, broken their vows, and had an affair with one of the company's receptionists, who, now that he thought about it, was way out of his league. But he'd been flattered, his ego stroked, by the attention of a beautiful, talented woman. Which was the lesser of two evils, taking the fall for money he hadn't stolen, or letting his wife learn that the man of her dreams was really a nightmare? He parked on the side and cut everything off. The only light illuminating the cabin was the bluish hue from his cell as he stared through blurry eyes at the images of him and Stephanie doing things that would make anyone blush. He thought about the life he'd be able to give Maya now. He thought about how he'd never have to worry about the compounding medical bills for his little girl. That insurance continued to deny, deny, deny. He thought about all of this, oblivious to the back row where his three dogs panted loudly, running from one window to another and fogging them up as the few cars on the freeway passed him. The message given to him had been clear. Make a choice. Take the heat for those dummy accounts or let these pictures find their way to Maya and absolutely destroy her. He couldn't do that to her. He'd rather Maya think he was a thief than a cheater, though what he'd been was an idiot with no backbone when faced with adversity. He'd never be able to look her in the eye again if she knew how easily he'd betrayed their promises to one another when Maya was at her most vulnerable, pregnant with their first child. Screw it, he sent the text. I'll do it. Destroy the photos, he typed. He added, now, as if he was tough and really had something to bargain with. He'd take the blame. He waited as the dots pulsed until the response popped up. Smart man. Behind him, the dogs barked at the few cars that passed. Since it was late and the traffic was relatively light, he'd driven far out, heading east toward Riverside County. Which desert town he'd end up in, he didn't care. LA was full of concrete problems, and he'd run from them, though those problems had still followed him here. His steps were heavy as he got out and opened the back passenger door, releasing the dogs from their confinement. They scampered off to frolic along the tree line while he watched, searing the memory of them into his mind, just as he'd done with Maya and his baby girl before leaving their home. He hoped they wouldn't be out here for long, that they wouldn't come across any coyotes or cougars. He didn't want to leave Maya with the burden of them as well. Besides, they'd always been more his dogs than hers. More tired than he'd ever felt before, he climbed back into his SUV and rolled the windows up. His next text was to Maya. I'm sorry. Did you need me to go more, or this is
That's probably a good place to stop, yeah. Thank you. And that was Yasmin Ongo reading From Behind These Four Walls. And this is sort of the event that sets everything else in motion. Yeah.
Yes.
And so the other two kind of Isla's partners in this investigative thing, Ray and Nan, is that the other character's name?
Yeah.
So they were very interesting characters too, even though they didn't get a lot of time on the page. Mm-hmm. So particularly Ray. So tell us a little bit about Ray.
So Ray is one of those like big techies. He does like securities, security for, you know, big firms and corporations that he's not permitted to talk about. So he makes a lot of money from that. And he used that money coupled with Isla's, the little bit that she had, to really form this investigative like trio that they have. And he's funny because he really doesn't have to, like he's the one of the three that needs it the least. But he's the tech guru. So they just come. He owns a coffee shop. It's very. He's a man of very many different like oddities. And so, but he's funny too. And so yeah, they all like work together. And then their third person, she is like an actress. And she's very like sweet. And all of them have like these different personalities, but they work well together. And so she's the one that's usually out there if they're trying to like get some dirt on someone. She'll be the one that's out there playing the role, and Isla right. is the one who's, you know, kind of created what the scenario is going to be, and she might be the backup. And then Ray is the one who's either recording, or he's getting like the tech, or taking the pictures, or he's getting like the tech stuff together. And they met in like in college, so they've become like just best friends, and they are the ones that really kind of hold her up, even though they're not in the, like you said, they're not in there a lot, but they are really friends that have been there for her since she lost her best friend Eden, and ones that she was able to trust before anyone else. So,
So have you
and not
thought
Nan, her
about
name was Nat. I'm sorry, her name
Nat?
was Nat,
Nat,
Natalie.
yes,
I was like, oh no, she's asking me names. Don't you know, after you write all these things, the names just purge out of your head. And I'm like, you said Nan, and I'm like, that doesn't sound right, but I'm gonna say yes, and then I'm gonna see it's Natalie.
Have you thought about having another book with these three investigators, but from one of either Ray or Nat's as the lead character?
Yeah, no, I hadn't thought about that. I would have to, that would be interesting. I think one of their, which is why I put one of their like jobs sort of in the story so that you can get a feel of what it is that they did and how they work together. So I think, I mean, I always try to put in characters that I find interesting that I would love to read more of myself. And so I would love to write just of some papers that they had gotten into, right? Even in this one with you know, with the person in the prologue, even with him, you know, how that all played out, you know,
Oh
was interesting. So yeah, you know, all of that, that would be interesting. They could have their own, like, it could be like a trilogy of, you know, their investigative like papers.
So I'm guessing, though, that you don't have a hard time coming up with ideas to write about.
Don't, but I have a hard time just trying to make sure that they'll make sense to other people. But I mean, because I could come up with all sorts of things, not even make sense, but be interesting. And I definitely want things to sound interesting. I don't want them to sound so convoluted that people will be like, ah, that doesn't even make any sense. But I want it to just be so interesting that even if I throw something in there like, oh yeah, this woman is going to be able to infiltrate these people and they'll just let her be there. You know, and we know that in real life that might not happen, but you never know, because then we get stories of, you know, that one, I can't even remember her name, Anna somebody,
Oh
who pretended to be somebody else, right? Yeah,
Or even
and
how
so
Jeffrey Epstein got into the higher, you know, the upper echelons of
exactly,
society.
exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I mean, now that I think about it, that's not so like out of, so out of the world, you know, you just have to talk a really good game
Well,
and
and
be very
also
like,
Isla was very beautiful, which didn't
and you have
hurt.
to be, and you, I was gonna say that, but then I was like, oh yeah, I don't know. People like, you have to look nice. You have to look appealing to people too. But I mean, just being honest, but like, but yeah, all of that. So yeah, like I do think about all these different ideas and I write them down. And then you know, I might tell my agent, this is these are the ideas that I have, and she'll be like, yeah, I don't, you know, maybe this, maybe not that. And I don't throw away anything that, you know, even if she doesn't seem to like it, because I feel like if I think about it long enough, this is my long thinking process. If I think about it long enough, I can come up with an idea that will really make that little idea that she wasn't so like hot on. She'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, that might make some sense. Because that's how it was with Behind These Four Walls. The initial idea that I had, you know, my agent and my editor, neither of them were like too, you know, hot on it. And I was like, I refuse to let this die. And so I worked on it and I worked on it and, you know, came up with like different angles of how to present the story and what it is that she was, you know, going to be looking for, what it is that she wanted, and to make sure also that it was, it didn't become a story that was too much about like the Corrigan's corporate life, you know, their business, because that's initially I think where I had gone with it. And we were like, oh, we don't want another Succession. And I was like, the funny thing is, I've never watched Succession in my life, so I wouldn't, I don't know how it went, but we, I don't want that then. Okay. And so yeah.
I don't know why you wouldn't want another Succession. It was very successful.
But I mean, maybe it's more successful in on a TV show than in a book. I don't know if it was a book prior to,
Yeah, I
but
don't know
maybe that was
either.
it. But yeah, so
Or may I don't know either, but you're listening to Writer's Voices. Our guest today is Yasmin Ongo, and the book is Behind These Four Walls. So that's interesting that you took that kind of made the change in the scope of this book. Now, I understand you also have a YA book coming out, which is completely different, right?
Totally different. Totally different audience, totally different genre, like what? But I mean, I've always, you know, I like to read widely and read all sorts of different genres. And I was approached to write, you know, a story. They wanted it to be a horror, a vampire story based on our...
Wait, why were you approached to write a vampire story?
I'm going to tell you, because they wanted the story to be about Ghanaian vampires. That's why. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So this was like right after Her Name Is Night came out, and they were like, we want to write. And I was like, how the hell did you know about Ghanaian vampires? Because, you know, that's not something that's talked about. They're so superstitious with like their religions. And so you very rarely hear about like the monsters in that culture, because it's a very, if you speak it, then you're bringing it to light, you know, something like that. So I was like, how in the world did you hear about the Ajay, which is what we call the vampire, or that's our vampire version, right? That's the name of it.
What was it? What's the name of
it? It's called the Ajay.
Ajay. Okay.
Ajay. Yeah. It's not spelled that way, but it's called the Ajay. Okay. But anyway, and so I was like, okay, well, sure, because I hadn't even heard a lot about it, right? And I was like, okay. And then I had to go, like, I tried to ask my mom, and I learned very quickly, don't ask your very religious Christian mom about vampires and folklore, because then she's like, let's go to church and let me bless you, because why are you asking me these things? And so, yeah. So she'll still today, she'll, you know, these days she'll like, are you still like, what is this book about? Are you still writing about vampires and demons? And I'm like, no, mom, it's okay. But I'm still writing thrillers. I'm still writing about people killing people. And she's like, where did you get these things from? And I'm like, my imagination. And she's like, you need Jesus. That's what she tells me. But oh, well, but yes, so I have that YA coming out in March. I'm very excited about it. I loved writing it. I loved, you know, digging into that story and giving it like a background and giving it, you know, and including our West African mythology. So there's a whole lot of different like things in that story. So I'm excited about it.
And the title is She Drinks the Light.
She drinks the light.
Yeah. And it's interesting because on your website, it says for fans of Sinners and Immortal Dark. Now, I don't know Immortal Dark, but of course, Sinners is getting a lot of press right now in a lot of end of year roundups of movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I did see that movie, and it was an amazing movie. Yeah, so to be compared to that is quite a compliment.
Yes, I appreciate that. I definitely didn't say that. When I saw my publishers had that, I was like, okay, like that's a pretty big one. So if people get mad, like they shouldn't get mad at me. And be like, you know, but yes, and Immortal Dark. Immortal Dark is also, it's a very popular vampire. It has a vampire in it too, so
okay.
It's very popular YA book.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal read. Yeah.
So are you going to continue writing YA, or are you going back to adult books now?
Well, I'm still writing my adult. I just finished my seventh one, right? So the YA will be my sixth book. And then, so I've just finished writing my seventh one and sent it to my editor and am waiting for her to come back to me with revisions. I would still write more YA if, you know, if they like it and they want more of it. I'm happy to, because I could definitely, especially with that story, I could definitely write more in that story and in that world. With some of the things that I introduced in that particular book. So yeah, if they want it, Yasmin shall bring it.
Are there any other genres that you're interested in exploring?
I like contemporary fiction. Like that would be interesting. And I like the idea of romance. Romance scares me more than like thrillers, and because you know the readers of romance are very, very like they're very they know what they want and they know what they're supposed to get, right? And so, and I'm more of a, like a darker kind of writer, so I don't think I could ever write like pure romance because there are certain tropes in there that it must be. And I like stories that kind of like go a little deeper and darker in the things that happen, right? And so there might not be a happily ever after, you know, or there might be something else that's going on that's a little bit more, you know, darker than what. So, but I mean, but I think that that's the, I think I admire them. Sci-fi also. If I could really like write about all those worlds and come up with all that stuff, because even writing the YA horror, coming up, you know, creating that world and coming up with that stuff was a little bit difficult, even though it's set in today's, you know, in real world today, right? To create a whole other world and all the names and stuff, those things like really like I get so confused. I need maps and encyclopedias to even figure out like what's going on Star Wars. So that one.
Yeah, I'm right now listening to Dawn by Octavia Butler on, you know, on books on tape kind of thing. And man, she was the master.
She was. I don't know how she did it. I've listened to her books, I've read her books, and I'm just like, I don't know how, like, to create a whole different world and to be as, oh, she's just wonderful.
I
She
know.
was.
I
And,
know. Very, yeah. So I can see how you could get caught up in creating that world. But then, like, I think if I were wanting to write in that genre, I'd want to do like, I'd want it to be a series because I wouldn't want to have to recreate the world every single time I'm sitting down to
right. You're so, and you're right, because if I think about it, they tend to be kind of, I don't know that, do I know any like real true standalones? And even if they are, they're like super big because you have to like really like explain the world, right? And then how do they explain the world in a way that doesn't sound so info heavy? You know what I mean? And so that's why it's hard for me to actually like read sci-fi. I have to listen to it and definitely watch it. Like I enjoy listening and watching way better than actually reading it because then I get confused with you know the different names for the different beings there and all of that stuff. Sci-fi and fantasy. So I really definitely need I'm a one with visual maps and things. Graphic organizers, Venn diagrams, give me all of that.
Back to Behind These Four Walls with Isla and her background coming out of the foster care system. Now, obviously, you didn't have that background, but do you know people? Do you have friends who did that you were able to make that realistic?
Yeah, no, but I was a former teacher, and
Ah,
so
yes.
I had students who were in the system, and students who were very transitory, even with their actual families. You know, they didn't, you know, have a actual home that, you know, we could list. And so, you know, having to work with them, having to work with the, you know, with the social worker on how to, you know, get those kids' needs and the different difficulties that they faced. And stuff like that has always been, you know, in the back of my mind. I'm always thinking about that. And then I know that definitely like here in South Carolina, especially when they get of a certain age, right? The whole aging out process, that's always been something for me because as I was seeing the students like, you know, moving up, moving, going into high school, I'm wondering like what's gonna happen to them like after that. Right. And like, what do they do after that? What are their options after that? Are they being trained in a way that they can take care of themselves, because I know my kids aren't. And you know what I mean? Like my kid, I don't necessarily train my kids, or I didn't before they went to college. And even now in college, if they were just to be dumped out, I just wonder how they would be. You know, I think they'd be okay, but like there's so many things, you know, that you just don't know just right off the bat. And so how are they prepared for that? And
And
that's just stuff that has been on my mind.
yeah, it's interesting too because I think it's even harder for young people now than like for my generation to go out and make it on your own. My parent, to be honest, my parents did kind of dump us at 18. And I mean, I had a great relationship with my parents, but my father in particular, who died when I was only 22, but he really pushed us out of the nest as soon as possible. And now I don't know that, you know, that you could that a child of 18, 19 can really function completely independently in the world today. I mean, but the kids coming out of the foster system have to.
They
And
have to.
also, I always knew that no matter what happened in my life, I had a home I could go to if everything fell apart. And that enabled me to take risks in my career and in my life that I might not have been able to do without that. And those risks are what made me incredibly successful. So, you know, yes, I worked hard, and yes, you know, I, you know, had a lot of you know, a lot of luck along the way too, but if you don't have that safety net, it's much, much harder to succeed, I
Very much
think.
harder. It is. And like you said, even today, like the cost of living is it there's no way, right? If once they are out of, you know, once they are out, you know, like whatever job, even college, all of that stuff is something that just falls solely on them, right? Where are they going to live while they're doing all that? So even finding the funds, like you said, because they don't have someone to fall back on. And so those are the things, because there aren't very many of those systems. And all of the states are not unified in what they do with the kids after they spit them out,
Yeah,
right?
you know,
And
that's
even
really
kids.
something that should be paid more attention to, for sure.
Exactly. Because even, you know, kids who are or students who have gone through college grads now are finding it difficult to have jobs. So, what do we do? And so those are the things that I was thinking about, like when you're in that situation where you know that you're gonna age out. You don't know exactly what's gonna happen. So Isla is like, I don't want to wait until they kick me out. I kind of want to take, you know, my life into my own hands and do what I need to do now. I don't want to wait. And so that's why she's like, I gotta go. And when she thinks that Eden is the only person she has left in Florida, at that time. And so when she thinks that Eden is gonna leave, she's like, oh no, it's even more like, you know, imperative that she goes now on her terms instead of waiting to see what happens. And so those are the things that like I'm always thinking about.
And of course, Isla does find a support system after she loses Eden, but with we don't want to give anything away, that doesn't turn out to be all for the best in the long run.
Right, exactly.
So, Yasmin, I want to thank you so much for being with us today on Writers' Voices. And we always close with a quote, and I wanted to use one that reminded me of something you said earlier from R.L. Stein. When I write, I try to think back to what I was afraid of or what was scary to me and try to put those feelings into books.
I love that. That's absolutely it. Thank you. I love that.
Well, thank you, and see you all next week on Writers' Voices.